Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that helps people with cancer to find out about and obtain integrative medicine. Regular listeners will know that I feature a range of guests from right across the spectrum of integrative medicine: practitioners, doctors, oncologists, policymakers, researchers, and extraordinary survivors. This week, I'm absolutely delighted to be speaking to someone really rather close to home for me, the new executive director of Yes to Life, Miguel Leon Canete. Miguel was our fundraiser until recently, when our long-standing and wonderful executive director Sue De Cesare retired, opening the way for him to take the helm. As you'll quickly hear, Miguel is a passionate man with great ambitions for the charity, so it's my pleasure to introduce him to you today. Hi Miguel, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
It's great to be able to introduce you to our listeners, most of whom won't have bumped into you yet. Sue De Cesare was the face of Yes to Life for something like 8 years before her recent retirement, so inevitably it's going to take a little while for everyone to get to know you. So the first thing I wanted to ask you about is your incredible passion for what we do at Yes to Life. There's an awful lot of charities out there. You've been around the charity sector for a long time. So what is it about Yes to Life that gets you so fired up?
Well, mainly it's people. I mean, it's who is around Yes to Life, who makes Yes to Life possible. Obviously the course, but from day one, when I interviewed with Sue, I just fell in love with everything, and even didn't feel that was an interview. It felt more like a meeting with a friend, you know, with someone that you've known for years and years. So everything, absolutely everything, all the ethos, all, you know, all the beliefs, all, everything that you do is something that I do believe in, and it was such a perfect match. So I fell in love on that day. Fact that the charity, it's that everybody who is involved in the charity is so passionate, it's just so contagious. I mean, you cannot be passionate about Yes to Life if you know Yes to Life. From day one, I just fell in love with it. And that's the best to work in the charity sector, that you actually believe in what the charity does and believe in its people.
Right, right. Well, of course, that's one of the big pluses of the charity sector, is if you work in it, quite often you can be working on something that you really, really care about, which is, of course, very rewarding. So, yeah, that's really great. I wonder, maybe you could just tell everybody a bit about your background, you know, what you've been involved with before you came to Yes to Life, and when you arrived, you were our fundraiser when you first arrived.
Yeah, and as you say, you know, I've been around the charity sector for this year, it's 22 years now. Purely dedicated on the charity sector, mainly in the UK. About 90% of my time is in the UK in the charity sector, and the other 10% abroad. And I've been in so many different places, so many different courses, and you know, from international development to, I don't know, homeless or the elderly. But again, you know, cancer and Yes to Life was is so close to my heart as well, for personal circumstances. So, and the way that and the things that Yes to Life does, it's amazing. So, yeah, it started as a fundraiser, and I had this incredible opportunity to become the executive director last year, and big shoes to fill, because Sue is an incredible, inspirational woman. So a little bit scary Thursday. But my background, as I say, is basically charity sector. I was originally working on the health sector, but I would say 22 years ago. But I've been really into the charity world and what we can change, and mentalities and everything that we can do from the charity sector. It used to be the third sector, and I think for me it's always been the first sector.
You mentioned there that kind of personal reasons for wanting to work with cancer. Do you mind me asking what those are?
Oh, I mean, basically my mum has been diagnosed with now 5 different type of cancers, all of them unrelated, so they just appear. So she's been going through for years and years through, as I say, you know, different cancers, and from, you know, breast cancer to colon cancer to, you know, skin cancer. And last year, April 2019, she was diagnosed with the last one, which is blood cancer. So she's got a lymphoma. And it's incredible. When I met with you guys for my interview, everything that Yes to Life, you know, offers and all the information, it's something that my mom was doing already, or maybe she didn't know she was doing things like, you know, healthy eating or exercise or you know, mindfulness. So she was doing so many things that I've already, and every cancer that she was diagnosed with, she's gone through, she's fine. Now, healthy-wise, well, you know, we still got the blood cancer now to fight, but her attitude, positive, and from the first one, which was like a death diagnosis, basically, to today, which is okay, I'm gonna get through these and we're gonna get together. It's again, you know, it's so inspirational. So yeah, personally, I think everything that we do, it has helped my mom as well, you know, through her illness. So yes.
Great. Extraordinary story. But you're getting so many different types of cancer that are sort of, I mean, obviously there's something related about getting so many, but as you say, they're different and unrelated cancers.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not metastasis, I don't know, one of the doctors say you are a factory of cancers, which is a horrible thing to say to you, I've been with my mum to the latest appointment recently, you know, just before Christmas, and obviously the words that they use, the language that they use, it was so confusing. She's 76, she doesn't understand this terminology, you know, and and basically, you know, just being there with her and just talking through what the doctor, translated what the doctor was saying, because obviously she was doing her job, you know, she was being professional. I mean, nothing wrong with that, but you know, just talking on a plain language with her, it did help us so much. So I think, you know, that giving information away, that which is one of the things that we, you know, that we do, we empower people through information, and that information needs to be in a language that I can actually understand what you're talking about. So which is great.
Okay, so last year, 2019, it was a tough year for many charities, I know, and it was no exception for us. Yeah. Some tough decisions had to be made in the recent months, and unfortunately, we've been unable to give out our small grants that we have been doing for many, many years. So what are your ideas about how things are going to go in 2020? Are you expecting any change in our operating environment?
I mean, it's not, it's the last 2-3 years, it's been, especially last year for many charities, it's been really, really tough. So there is no exception. So the donations in the UK, we are a generous country, so donations has not decreased, but they have, they are more, let's say, selective with the courses that the UK public support. And maybe regular giving has gone down a little bit. So there are trends, but the main problem in every single conference meeting that I've been through last year, it's about trust. And obviously there has been a lot of things going on with some charities, and people and public, when they donate the money now, they want trust in their charity that they support. So I think that is going to be a major shift for this year, 2020, that, you know, charities are more open, clear, transparent, much more that we've been through all the sector. And I think that is going to be a change in 2020 of opening to the public on a different way. You know, there is a shift as well in the charity sector, with the younger generation going more obviously, you know, new technologies, new channels, new ways of communicating, all these things, the charity sector needs to embrace them and just be abreast of any new piece of equipment that comes out on the market. Yes. Because we do need to talk in a different way now to people. And that is going to be, 2020 is going to be challenging for the charity sector, but not challenging on a nice way of saying, okay, if we think out of the box, then and we are abreast of the new technologies, then we will succeed.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You're absolutely right. Of course, there's been quite a bit of news from the charity sector in the last few years, but it's not been good news, has it? All these scandals have done nothing for the credibility of charities, even though, of course, most charities are not involved in any of that kind of thing. But it has tarnished the whole sector. And as you say, it's kind of rocked people's fundamental trust in what's going on. So, there's work to do to rebuild that trust.
Yes, and again, you know, it is just about being open and honest and clear with everything. And the charity sector, you know, has so long history in the UK that we are being seen as a good cause, and we are good causes. Obviously, we do good, and every single charity that I know, they do a brilliant job. But we need to open that door and let let people know what actually we do and how we do it. So, and we don't need to be afraid of telling people, and that's a charity sector changing their mind as well sometimes. But bad press, again, you know, in the charity sector, only one little bad thing, it can be, you know, multiplied by 10, while, you know, in the private sector, sometimes that things doesn't happen.
Right.
Well, you know, we need to be really conscious that this is public money, so we need to, you know, we need to be accountable for it, and that is a great thing that we should be, and we are accountable to the public. So, and I always love that, just to be that clear, you know, that it's not my money, it's not someone else, it is the public, and our benefactors, our regular givers, our supporters, our challengers. All these are making the charity sector powerful. So.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, we'd like to be back in a stronger position just as soon as possible and able to offer greater support to our beneficiaries. I just wondered where you're going to be looking for first and foremost for support for our work. You know, do you looking to the public, to trusts and foundations or philanthropists? Where do you think support is going to be coming from in the coming year or two?
I mean, obviously, we rely so much, obviously, you know, from the support for the public, for our, you know, for friends and for families and for supporters and all kinds, and, you know, people just doing incredible things that for the last 2 years that I have the honor to work for yesterday that I've seen, you know, people just running, doing the London Marathon, doing the Provincial London, doing walks, 10Ks. I mean, it's incredible. I just, you know, had this morning a lovely note to someone who wants to do an app sale for us, which is, my great. God, you know, it's crazy, but it's going to be amazing, you know? And so these kind of things is, obviously, we do need these things. We need, you know, people thinking about us when they, you know, when they go. So the legacies are... It is a lot of things, but I think for 2020, there are a few, as I said before, you know, we need to think out of the box, and grants are getting more innovative as well. They want things that are innovative, they're new, that haven't been tested. So I think there's a big chance for us to grow in the grant sector, on the trust and foundations. As I say, you know, the new technologies, social media, it needs to be in the center of all the fundraising as well. So I think those two lines, and obviously giving the opportunity to everyone to do things for us, a cake sale, you know, the most traditional fundraising way of, but, you know, every little thing helps. So my main point for next year will be focusing on grants and focusing on online fundraising or new technologies.
Mm-hmm. Great. And in amongst that, you also, you mentioned legacies, and so looking back, I know that there have been some extraordinarily generous people who've made a massive difference to the trajectory of Yes to Life by leaving substantial legacies. These can be so important to charities, can't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. And yes, yes, because it helped us as well to plan and help us, you know, just help us with increase the number of beneficiaries that we're going to help in one go. So it is incredibly important for all the charity sector, the legacies.
And increasingly, you know, even people who maybe they have a number of commitments that they want to honour and support in their legacy, but even a percentage of a legacy is a very valuable gift. And again, as you say, it just gives you a completely different kind of resource.
Oh yeah, and you know, Robin, one of the things that people think about legacies is like, oh, I need to leave everything to the charity, or you know, what about my family, my kids. And it's not that. I always say to people, just make a list of who and what do you want to leave, and what percentage or what exactly you want to leave to each person. And when you're done, what can you leave to the charity of your choice, which obviously we hope is Yes to Life, but right at the end is Yes to Life. So is it 1%, 2%, or 10% of your estate, 0.5%, whatever. It always helps. But always think about your people first, obviously. People about, you know, your husband, wife, kids, and whoever, cousins, friends, anything. And then, you know, think about the charity. It's not about the commitment of I'm leaving everybody with nothing and leaving everybody to the charity. That's not realistic, and that's not what we're asking people for.
Okay. Despite being unable to operate our small grant scheme recently, we do still offer support in the form of personal fundraising schemes. Now, these are something not everybody knows about. Do you want to explain what a PFS is and how it operates?
Yeah. So, I mean, a personal fundraising scheme, it's basically raising funds, raising money towards the treatment of your choice. It's as simple as that. And obviously, this involves, you know, asking friends, family to donate towards your own treatment plan, you know, just holding fundraising event, asking people to take a challenge to raise money for you. So it's basically doing all the fundraising, but for your own treatment. And the importance as well, so, you know, so we how our scheme operated, we hold that money on a restricted account, and obviously we release that money back to your treatment. And doing this through a charity makes, obviously, again, you know, gives that confidence and that trust to that person doing the challenge and raising the funds for your treatment, because obviously, again, you know, we are accountable, so we got all our systems in place to be able to demonstrate that money has been used and is used for what he says that it's going to be used, rather than, you know, doing or raising the funds through yourself. We have had some amazing stories about, you know, people who's done the treatment, and you can not use it for a treatment, but you know, for organic food, for supplements, for a therapy, for equipment. There are so many things that you can use the funds that you raise. And again, you know, people sometimes when you have cancer, and I know, as I say by experience with my mom, they don't know how to help you. Sometimes they don't know how,
yes,
what to do. They don't know how to say it. There are so many things that people are scared or afraid, you know, supporting you. While, you know, if you need that, I don't know, that supplement, and you're raising the funds to get that supplements done, or that treatment, or that equipment, you're giving the opportunity to those friends, family, relatives, anyone around you to support you with that £10, £15 running and raising funds for you. So it's a huge opportunity for those people around you to actually help you, rather than not knowing how how to ask, how to help, you know?
Right. That's a really important thing, isn't it? I mean, it's just, you know, so many people talk about the awkwardness, if you like, of someone having cancer and how they feel like their friends literally a bit embarrassed or don't know whether to bring the subject up or not or how to talk about it. And actually putting it out there and asking them if they can help you with something actually is great for people. They really like it generally.
Yeah. And I spoke with so many beneficiaries with a PFS open, and it's a way as well for them to explain what I'm going through, what is going on with me, on a plain and simple way. But this is me, and this is what is going on, and this is how you can help me. It's so powerful, rather than sitting around a table and crying. You know, it just tell me this is how you can help me, and this is my story. You know, and that is right at the beginning. Maybe you don't like it too much to talk about it and everything, but the more that you open, the more that people understand what you're going through, and the more they want to support you.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing which is rather great about these is that the best of the schemes are very educational. Really, the person who's doing it communicates what they're doing and why they're doing it to a lot of people who generally, I mean, if you haven't had cancer, you don't generally want to know about it. You know, most people who haven't had to find out about cancer don't know about it. And it's that kind of hoping it won't happen to me or my friends scenario. But it's actually, of course, learning about cancer, particularly integrative approaches, is learning about being healthy and avoiding cancer. So it's a massive education to a lot of people on, what are the factors involved in getting cancer. And of course, they may get diagnosed themselves, or their close ones may get diagnosed. And so it could be incredibly useful information to them one day as well.
Yeah, folks, it has so many benefits, to be honest. And as I say, it's for the person, it's for your family, it's for your friends, the network, you know, and it's obviously, as you say, you know, it helps me as a patient, let's say, or, you know, as a beneficiary. It helps my family, helps my friends. It is a nice way. And again, you know, and I really want to make this sure that, doing this through a charity and obviously through Yes to Life, it gives that confidence to your supporters that actually the funds are well managed, that the funds are used for what it says is going to be used. So it gives a next level of trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that I can remember myself, the few people that I've dealt with over the years, is that, first of all, the sort of willingness to do such a public thing tends to be a bit age dependent. You know, the younger people are, the more up for it they are. It doesn't come naturally to people who are a bit older to be that public about their needing help. But nonetheless, the feedback that's come from people who've sort of maybe overcome their resistance and decided to go for it anyway, of having this huge amount of goodwill, because every gift comes with a great message usually coming towards them. The effect of that on their mindset, on their general well-being, is it been enormous?
Yes, and yeah, and as you say, you know, I mean, maybe the older generation doesn't want to, but again, you know, and you say we do speak to many, so many people around, and the more that they open, obviously, the more that the perception changes of the way that we speak about it. So it's probably not the same like 15 years ago. So yeah, it is a benefit as well for the beneficiary to open and to make sure that how we speak. But again, you know, seeing what people can do for you and seeing all the crazy things that sometimes people do for you and all these upsales and jumpings and running and yeah, you know, preparing themselves for a marathon, you know, which is an endurance challenge. So it is so humbling, you know. It just makes you realize that people actually cares and can go the next step for you, and that's incredible fulfilling when you're going through a cancer, you know?
Absolutely. So, over the years, Yes Life's relied really heavily on volunteers for its running. In particular, the helpline, of course, is entirely operated by trained volunteers. And this has enabled us to deliver maximum benefit for the lowest costs, but at the same time to capitalise on the unique enthusiasm and dedication of volunteers, of people who really understand what we're doing. Just interested to know, is this a theme you plan to continue?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me tell you, I mean, there are obviously many charities, and the charity and the voluntary sector is heavily dependent on the volunteers to run in any charity that I'm on. And again, you know, one of the good things about Yes to Life is that, again, you know, those volunteers are so committed, and in every single thing that we do, from someone putting together an event for us, or the wigwams, or office volunteers, I don't know, admin volunteers, anyone who can help us obviously helps. But our, you know, our helpline volunteers, and I'm not going to dismiss anybody else, but helpline volunteers are real heroes. I mean, they're the front line for us, and you know, picking up those phone calls from family, from beneficiaries, from friends worrying, asking things, telling them their stories. They're incredible. They are absolutely incredible. So, and he's, again, you know, speaking to the volunteers, last time I saw them all in one room, but it's fulfilling for them as well. So it goes both ways, because, again, you know, you not just you learn, but you know people, and you get to know them. So it is incredibly fulfilling for them as well. But they're my heroes. I mean, they are real heroes. We need more helpline volunteers. We train you, we give you all the support, we give you all the tools, and we are behind you all the time, and you know, we just we need more people just to come forward and say, yes, I want to do it. It only works for like a day a week, or any of your, you know, disponibilities, or morning, or afternoon, or day, or 2 days a week, whatever you can give us, and you can do it from your own home. So there is no office hours or anything like that, but it is one of our most important schemes, and the people who run and the people who actually answer the phone and speak to everyone are there. They're my heroes.
Right. Yeah, really important service. And just to say, yeah, all the people who are on the helpline have their own personal experience, maybe not of cancer themselves, some do, but others have got experience of somebody close to them having cancer, so they really know the score, they know the kind of position that callers are in who are calling the helpline. So do you want to have something about other areas people might be able to volunteer in if they wanted to help Yes to Life?
Yeah, I mean, there are many ways. I mean, the most important thing is obviously your expertise. So if you are a social media guru, or if you are, you know, a designer, or anything that can support us and lower the cost of, you know, because everything, obviously, even if we are a charity, we need to pay for things.
Right.
If you can get that help with expertise, that will be absolutely amazing. Obviously, you know, you can actually volunteer doing your own events, which is fundraising. But when I'm looking for volunteers, I'm always, what are you passionate about? What is your best, what you know to do best, and what you love to do, and what can you, you know, can you offer that to us, so we can just lower the cost of the running cost for the charity, so we can use that money actually towards our beneficiaries, which is the main point.
Yeah, great. All right. So you had a little while to get your feet under the desk now, so to speak, and it's a bit soon to be expecting a full-blown plan, but I'm keen to know what you've got in the pipeline and what you want to see in the longer term for Yes to Life.
So obviously, like any charity, when you plan for the long term, it's being sustainable, so that we can, you know, that we go out of those two horrible years maybe of the charity sector and in general, but obviously for Yes to Life as well, so we can be sustainable, and we can grow, and we can grow our services, we can grow the reach of people. So that's the most important thing, on the main aim, reaching more and more people on a daily basis. and that our services are bigger. I'm planning, obviously we're planning our spring conference in March, so that it's, you know, for events wise, our spring conference in London, 21st of March, so it's open now for buying your places or your tickets. We're planning smaller events, and we're planning as well to increase the number of wigwam groups, which if you, that means, so the wigwam groups is just a group of people who meet in their own, you know, sometimes in their own kitchen, on their own town hall or anything, and it's a support group, so I can, you know, I can meet all the people either suffering cancer or families or friends or relatives of people who are getting on that day together for coffee or for a drink or for tea, and then, you know, talking about their own experience and getting support. So the wigwams as well, I want to offer them as well more smaller events, workshops, or more theme based. So that is some a line that I want to explore for this year. You know, we had for the first time in the charity, we had this a big strategy day, which is needed for every charity, just to have what is our long-term plan and our three-year plan and everything. And we had it back in November with beneficiaries, volunteers, trustees, external providers. So it was such a nice group of people. And from there, we will see what the plans come from the next 3 years. But again, you know, I think our stretching, increasing the services, being sustainable and reach more people, those will be our main focus for the next few years and long term.
Okay, and just to come back, you mentioned a wigwam there. This is a relatively new initiative for Yes to Life, but it's you know, it's gaining some momentum. We've got quite a few set up around the country. Just maybe we should say a little bit more about that for people who are either interested in joining one that exists or maybe setting up a new one if there's nothing in their area. So what sort of number are there now in existence, and what's the requirements for one?
We have five at the moment running, if I'm not wrong. And they are all around the home counties. So we have in Oxfordshire, Hertfordshire, and London. It is just a group of people meeting on whenever they can on a regular basis, or you know, when they have they have the ability to do, and just explore and just to talk and just to support each other. So the difference between this is it's quite an organic group, so there is no requirements as such to be part of the group apart for willingness of, you know, sharing and helping each other. You know, we will help as much as we can with our, you know, with this type of setting up. So we have our wigwam coordinators, which are volunteers, and they will help you as well if you're interested in opening a wigwam group, to do all the setting ups and all, you know, what you need to take into consideration and what you need.
So this is really something that the charity is facilitating, but it's not overly prescriptive about what actually happens in them, you know, what the group chooses to focus on doing.
Yes, so we don't get involved then in the running of the group. So this is, as I say, this is quite an organic way. It needs to be inspiring for all the people who comes to the group. So we can give resources to that group. We can give sometimes some support, some financial support, etc. If we can, but it is them organizing their own meetings, their own timetables, their own spaces. So as I say, you know, the for me, the most wonderful thing about this program, this week one, it is an organic thing that they run on their own.
Yeah, interesting. It does seem to be sort of filling a gap. I mean, obviously, the big thing at the moment is in social media, where there's been an explosion of groups of people meeting online. But it's a bit different, isn't it, when you actually get face to face with, you know, 6, 8, 10 people on a regular basis and build a relationship and just really be with like-minded people, which can be so hard to find sometimes.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, again, you know, as we said, I mean, technology, social media, you know, internet, all these great tools, But again, you know, it is me on the screen. It's not me and a group of people sitting around a coffee shop and just sharing that information that some, you know, that we have. So the one-to-one, the person-to-person, still the most powerful tool that we have just to share. And I know we share everything on social media, absolutely everything, but that feeling, sharing and talking to someone and listening to someone on a one-to-one, that has no equal, you know, on the social media internet world.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. All right. Well, look, we're nearly there with the time, but I just wondered whether you could round up, Miguel, with just a round up of the ways that any inspired listeners can get involved and can support the work of Yes to Life.
Yeah, I mean, we do need the support, as I said in the beginning, from the public. And we need the support for us to be able to support other people as well. And so, which why we're here for. But there are many, many ways. And you know, I'm always open to suggestions as well. But I don't know.
Right.
You know, just you can do this from anywhere in the UK. So just put your own local event. You know, as I say, your own cake sale, your own stall. It doesn't need to be a big one, but you know, we have lots of opportunities for challenges. We still have one place at the Prudential Ride London for 2020, which is one of the biggest cycling events in the UK. So that can be, you know, a really good way of getting, you know, just do some sport and getting sponsored and support a charity. But we have plenty of other challenges. You can introduce us people who has a business who wants to support us, who wants to nominate us Charity of the Year, who wants to collaborate with us, or who wants to make a donation directly to us. People with obviously philanthropies, people with a philanthropy way of getting engaged with a charity. I don't know, the beneficiaries, obviously, just ask friends, family to fundraise for you. So that, again, you know, that helps the charity. Basically, sometimes it's more powerful as well. Just spread the word. Just tell how, you know, wonderful Yes to Life is and what, how you can get involved and why you should get involved with us.
Great. All right. Thank you very much, Miguel. Thank you particularly for your passion for the charity. It's so great. You're so dedicated to the success of Yes to Life. Of course, I'm wishing you every success for your plans in 2020 and on. So, thanks very much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much, Robin.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope that's inspired some of you to want to support the unique services of Yes to Life to help us to help more people who are struggling to do all they can to meet a diagnosis of cancer. Miguel mentioned our London conference on March the 21st. If you want to read more about it or to book, go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click on the Educational Programme tab. Many thanks for listening today. I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio at the same time next week. And I hope you can join me again. Goodbye.